Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
In Madrid in March of 2005, the career of David Gillick was put under a new spotlight. He'd just become the European indoor champion over 400 metres, a feat he would go on to repeat 2 years later in Birmingham. But a career on the world stage of athletics is always much more than the medals that you and I may be aware of. The good days, the race is David Gillick's account of his rise in athletics and where he is today on our TV screens and all that happened in between. And the good days sometimes are outweighed by some of the bad days. The two-time European champion and world finalist David Gillick is with me now. David, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me in.
Some of the stuff we may talk about might not be suitable for little ears, so we'll just be careful of what we say. Now, you might have been a footballer.
I dreamt about playing in the Premier League, and I think my pace at a young age helped me around a few defenders, and then suddenly the sweeper was a trend in football, and then I kind of realised, oh, there's another person I have to try and beat here. But no, I loved football and played a lot of soccer growing up and played a lot of GAA, and I think speed was probably something that stood out across all sports, you know.
Yeah, but your family, I mean, your mother and father, both very sporting.
Yeah. Mum, I basically grew up on the side of a basketball court. Mum got inducted into the Hall of Fame of Basketball Ireland there last year, and she was heavily involved both as a player, referee, table officiator, and then went on to set up the Dublin Ladies Basketball Board. So sport, and my dad as well, I'm the youngest of four. It was our house was pretty much immersed in sport.
So whatever was on the telly, you'd watch it?
You'd have it blaring on the TV, and then it was blaring out of the radio in the kitchen. And we'd get behind anything, you know, all sports. The Olympics was a huge thing. I can remember growing up, you know, all of the major achievements we've had in the Olympics were certainly kind of in every room of our house. Mm.
Now, you wanted to be a footballer. How did you move to running? I mean, obviously you discerned your own speed on the pitch.
Yeah. It was kind of one of these things. I think, you know, as a teenager, you evolve in sport. And, you know, my parents gave me every opportunity to do a whole variety of different activities. And I think you kind of, as you grow up, 15, 16 year old, begin to realise, okay, which one am I making progress in? GA was kind of a sport that I was doing well in. And then sport and athletics was always in the background. I would have done cross country. I would have thrown the shot. I did everything growing up. And my school, St. Benilda's as well, was a proud tradition. But I think it came to when I was a junior, so under 20. And I'd made kind of great inroads. I won my first All-Ireland underage over 400 metre hurdles. And then the biggest thing was the World Juniors. And in 2002, they were on in Kingston, Jamaica. And that was the big goal. Unfortunately, I missed the individual qualification time. I ran 0.4 too slow.
But that's maybe the bad news. There was good news to follow.
There was, because we got selected as part of the relay team. And I went as a young lad over to Kingston, Jamaica. And this championship just completely and utterly blew my mind.
Now they're mad about their running in Jamaica. God help them this morning as Melissa is
right,
barreling towards them. But there was a young man there, maybe even more nervous than yourself.
Yeah, he was nervous, and he was a lot younger. He was about 2 years younger. So he had a number of years ahead of him still in the junior ranks. But on that Saturday night, people were literally climbing over the walls and climbing over the gates into the national stadium. I think it was 45,000 people. And I remember just kind of standing there and just taking it all in and just thinking, this atmosphere is unreal. And then the crowd starts shouting, Bolt, Bolt, Bolt. And out comes Usain Bolt in the 200 metres. And he looked really nervous. Not the Bolt that we got to know, who was, you know, doing all the dancing and stuff like that before the blocks. This was
and,
a young
and the
lad.
Bolt of lightning
and the Bolt
trademark,
which
he adopted.
But he won the 200 metres and the whole stadium just erupted. And I remember just...
And you observed him. His technique was
he was
brutal.
Raw. He was ragged. But his just natural ability just stood out. The natural talent. And you're just kind of thinking, God, if this guy refines stuff, he's going to be a superstar.
I mean, you were able to observe him, you know, as he takes the bend, because being 200 metres, there is a bend to be negotiated, and he's kind of rambling along there. Then he hits the straight.
He just took off. It was ragged, really ragged around the first, you know, the first bend, as you said, the first 100 metres. And then suddenly he's pulling away and pulling away. And, you know, his technique, he's arching back, it's arms and legs going everywhere. But he had that natural pace and strength that was there.
So that was the spark.
That was definitely the spark. I just remember taking it all in and kind of thinking, you know what? I want more of this. I want to be like him. I want to be down there as an individual. And I came back from that experience, and that was the time I decided, okay, David, you're going to have to make a bit of a choice, because I was still playing GA from a local club, Ballantyre, and, you know, injuries, and you're just getting a little bit older. And if you really want to focus on something, you got to go all in. And that was the clincher for me to go, okay, I'm going to become, I'll try and become an athlete.
And you were lucky there was a club locally, DSD.
Yeah, like I was blessed to grow up in an area where we had great volunteers, and, you know, Liz and Eddie McDonough set up Dundrum Athletic Club, and then became Dundrum South Dublin. And it was literally at the end of my road. And being the youngest of four, my two brothers and my sister all participated. And that got me involved in athletics. And I suppose, you know, I can just remember enjoying it. I was doing it with my friends up in Marley Park. And then I went on in the club, and Lucy Moore, Jim Kidd, people like that, just volunteers invested their time in me.
Now, you obviously had run cross country. It's part of the discipline, really, building up strength and so on. And you weren't half battered. By the way, congratulations on your marathon.
Yeah, I'm like the walking wounded here. I was coming in here and I was walking across the traffic lights and it went orange and I was thinking, oh, don't.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Make me run. I'm tired. I'm not going to lie. I'm very tired.
Yeah, I mean, do you have aches and pains? One expects an elite athlete not to have those aches and pains.
I was wishing I lived in a bungalow, because the stairs yesterday morning, I had to go down backwards, crawl down. Not good.
Mm. Okay, so anyway, as I say, you did cross country and so on, which is part of the discipline for...
Yeah, it's where you kind of earn your stripes. You know, you do everything as a young lad and you kind of figure it out, and whether you're speed-based, whether you're more endurance-based. Mm. And for me, speed was always something that I had, you know, and I could kind of... Athletics is a broad variety of events. So it takes time to actually, where do I position myself?
I mean, I presume they have ways these days of measuring your twitch and you've got that explosive
start,
for example.
Yeah, there's a lot of sports science now involved in it. Back then, there wasn't much so. Good coaches would spot, you know, your talent on kind of more endurance base. And then you're looking at, okay, well, what event, or maybe the event picks you. And in my case, it wasn't until kind of like, you know, late fifth year, leaving cert year, did I try at first the 250 metre hurdles, and then that evolves into 300, and then lo and behold, you end up at the 400. And sometimes for the subsequent years, I used to think, why am I doing one of the hardest events? Could I not have done the long jump or something? Because the 400's a killer. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not middle distance running, and it's more than... the sprint.
Just think of trying to go as fast as you can for as long as you can. And generally speaking, you get to about 320 metres, and then suddenly it's a fight to that line. But in many ways...
And where does it get you? I mean, do you get lactic acid build-up?
Yeah.
Like the last 80... Is it your lungs? Is it your chest?
It's everything, Pat. I'm telling you. Like, the marathon is hard. Don't get me wrong. It's really hard. But the 400 metre hurts more. In that moment, it's everything. Your muscles, your head, your nose starts tingling. And the aftermath is even worse. So when you cross the line, you're literally flat on the back and you're thinking, oh my God, this is, someone scraped me off the track here.
Yeah. Now, building up your time, how did you get from being kind of there or thereabouts to being someone who could actually compete?
Yeah, like it evolved over time. Like, I was improving. I was probably a little bit of a late developer, I think, in my teenage years, and, you know, strength, and I kind of got taller, and all of that kind of happened probably around kind of 18, 19, my times improved. And then I had that break, as you mentioned, in 2005, which really kind of propelled me onto a new level. And I think belief came into it as well, and confidence.
Now, talking about belief, I couldn't believe the superstitions that you were involved with. I mean, you described them all. Like, you wore a pair of socks it to is. Victory.
Yeah.
So you kept wearing the same socks until they were...
Well, I thought it was the socks, you know, and, and then there was the times I'd go away and, you know, your diet can be restricted in terms of wherever you are and you may not be able to eat whatever you want. So you just have to make do. And it was a pizza. So I ate a pizza, got up the next day and ran this was in Belgium and I ran a personal best. And I was like, I got to eat a pizza before I run every time. Other times where...
What about the bed?
I was going to say, yeah, I remember I was in a race in Madrid, actually, and I got in late. The flight was delayed. So I probably landed, got to the hotel about 11 p.m., walked into the room. And there was a Japanese guy.
Always wanted the bed nearest the door.
Exactly. And you don't get a choice as to who you're rooming with. So I wanted the bed closest to the room. Why? Because in a previous race, I had the bed closest to the door and I ran well. Walked into the room and there's a Japanese guy in my bed. And no English. And eventually I was like, I'm not going to win this battle. I just have to make do. And I had the other bed and... You just have to roll with it. The following day, I got up and I ran a personal best. So I was like, it's not the bed, David. Chill out.
So did you abandon all the superstitions?
I just got to the point where, you know what, like just control the controllables and just, you know, focus on them.
Now, your wins indoor, and you write in the book about that many of the kind of big time athletes don't bother with the indoor.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I suppose in athletics, you're looking at the outdoor championships being the major, the bigger championships. And don't get me wrong, there are major championships indoors as well, Europeans and Worlds. But I think for me, it was a stepping stone to greater things. I wanted to perform in, let's say, the Olympic Games or the World Championships outdoors. So indoors was great, propelled my career. But I wanted more. And arguably, some athletes might bypass an indoor season and focus on the outdoor season because the indoors, it's a different race. It's 200 metres. The track is banked. And in 400 metres, you do two laps. So it's a little bit more bumpy. You don't stay in the lanes. Different
I mean, it sounds ridiculous. Like, you really have to have your elbows sharpened up, don't
100%,
you?
100%. And it's a different, tactically, it's a different race. You have to go out harder. You have to own the first 150 metres and get yourself into position. But I love the bumpiness of it. I love the fact that...
But you're a big guy.
Yeah, and I loved a bit of fight. You know, I liked it. And I love the challenge of it all. And I think that kind of, you know... It gave me the belief that, you know what, David, the times are improving. You've won two European medals now. Let's go for more. Let's try and do something that hasn't been done in a very long time. And let's make a global sprint final.
Now, you've had your ups and downs and you've been to different places along your route. Florida, Loughborough, which is critical to you because you met the missus.
I did. Yeah, Charlotte, yeah. We were housemates.
You were a reluctant suitor.
Well, I just was like, you know what, David, you've made a decision to relocate and, you know, give everything to your career. And, you know, next minute you're falling for a housemate. And I was thinking, this, you know, this could get a little bit messy here, you know. But it didn't. And it was brilliant. I loved my time in Loughborough. It was fantastic. Great environment to be in. You know, like-minded people, medal winners, and you're just in that ecosystem and you've been challenged every day. I was training with people that were faster than me. That really brought me
up. I mean, the extraordinary thing you write about is when you were back in Dublin, for example, it was only really a question of by how much you might win when you were training.
Yeah.
Whereas in Loughborough, it was by how much you might lose.
Yeah. No, 100%. There was no disrespect to the people I was training with here, but if I had a good day, maybe 10 metres ahead of them. If I had a bad day, it was 5 metres ahead. And I think, you know, subconsciously, you're kind of, well, what am I getting out of this? And we've been challenged. And I think I needed to really focus on being around people who were going to push me in every session and really raise the bar. And that's what Loughborough was to me. I was training with a guy, Martin Rooney, who was he was faster than me. Simple, because it's on times. And I knew if I could be with him day in, day out, well, then, you know what, that's got to bring me on to a new level.
It's amazing when you describe some of the races and, you know, when there's one guy, I've forgotten who it was, but you were there on his shoulder and then you saw him falter. And then you knew you had him, even though he was a metre ahead of you.
Yeah, he was. Bastian Swillams in the indoor final in 07. And I remember in the semi-final, he was in semi-final one, and I was in semi-final two. And he was a big German, and he was really, really talented. And I remember watching that race thinking, okay, he won. And I was like, he's in good shape. I'm going to really have to find something. And in the indoors, he went out and I just hung on him. And it was just a little kind of, a little twitch, I'd say, with about 50 metres to go. And I thought, I have him. And that's all I needed, that kind of momentum, that belief. And I'd probably pass him with 10 metres to go.
Now, so far, it sounds like everything came easy. It did not. I mean, your mental health issues, there were times when you were really at a low ebb.
Yeah, I was. You know, I was probably one of these type of athletes where I took confidence from success in training, you know, and I could stand behind the blocks and kind of tell myself, okay, you've given everything, you've left no stone unturned. And, you know, I was improving. And in all that duration, I actually didn't have any setbacks in terms of injuries. And I think we talk about resilience, and I often look back and go, I wonder if I had a few niggles earlier on, would that prepared me for what came later in my career? And in athletics, you always roll into the next year. You want more. You're trying to find that point one. And probably 2010 was a tough year. I didn't medal at World Indoors and I didn't medal in the European Outdoors. And the knee-jerk reaction was London was on the horizon. I would need to get faster. And I made a decision to relocate to the States. And I probably didn't value what I had in Loughborough. Yeah. Probably more off the track, socially. Friends and kind of been close to home and having Charlotte there as well. But again, you're in that performance mindset. I wanted more. And I relocated to a group with some of the fastest people on the planet. And I found myself very lonely. And then I got injured. And it was probably the worst thing that could have happened at that time. I spent an awful lot of time by myself. Again, I wasn't competing, so therefore I wasn't making any money. Then suddenly you're thinking, how am I going to pay for this? And slowly but surely, I began overanalyzing everything I was doing, food. And that's probably where the first kind of element of mental health really came to the fore, where I was beginning to struggle a little bit. But again, being male, alpha male, faster, fitter, stronger, showing a weakness. Whatever you do, David, you don't talk about this. And I didn't. And that went on for a couple of years, if I'm honest. And, you know, I struggled. And the loneliness kind of really crept in. And I tried to change things, go back to Loughborough, head of London. I got injured again.
There are so many things in the book. I recommend it thoroughly because there's so much more. I mean, the just trying to make a living out of the thing and having enough funding to do what you want to do, it's not straightforward. And then, of course, ultimately, you become an interviewer yourself and you cast your mind back to when in the mix zone you wanted maybe to avoid the reporters because you hadn't performed.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe they didn't even want to talk to you because you hadn't performed.
There was plenty of occasions like that, Pat, where simply I didn't want to walk through what's known as the mix zone, and it's the only exit point in the stadium. You have to walk through. And I can remember particularly 2010, the race didn't go well at all, and you kind of look up to the steps and you go, I'm going to have to walk through this area now. And I think that's probably kind of made me realise my role now in terms of athletic coverage and the empathy and the humanity that I can show the athletes when they come through, and some of their biggest and some of their lowest days. And
I've been there
more times than the good days. But the reality is, it's been human and allowing them the opportunity. It's not about David Gillick, it's very much about that individual.
Well, the book is absolutely fantastic. It's called The Race, The Inside Track on the Ruthless World of Elite Athletics. Dervla Rourke describes it, a raw account of how savagely hard it is to be world class. David Gillick, thank you very much for joining us on the programme this morning.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.